I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is your daily news investigative magazine. Well, a top banker with the Federal Reserve is saying, yes, we're going to top 10% unemployment this year. But don't worry, Richard Fisher, a member of the Federal Reserve's Interest Rate Setting Committee, said the central bank would use, quote, every tool it has to fix the economy. We continue to watch things Wall Street and Main Street with our Wednesday advisor, Catherine Austin Fitz, who takes us from Wall Street and translates for those of us who don't quite get it.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Catherine, welcome back to Flashpoint.
Thanks, Dennis.
Good to have you with us. Well, 10% unemployment is pretty bad, but this guy Fisher says he's going to help us.
Well, I have news for you. Shadow Stats, which is a website which focuses on digging into the official statistics and trying to undo the lies, says, in fact, that the rate is 19%. Latest from Shadow Stats, and I think Shadow Stats is right.
19%?
And that's not counting underemployment, because remember, we have a lot of people who've left a job at a reasonable income and are either working part-time or taking something which is not up to their qualifications just to bring in income. And I think if you include the underemployed, you're talking unemployed and underemployed together is about 40 to 50%.
Well, just taking a quick look back last week, G20, anything interesting coming out of that for you?
The only thing I see is a repackaging of things that have been promised or said before, and my read between the lines is a lot of the money that's going to go to the emerging world is really just going to institute more debt bondage. So, G20 indicated, you know, it's sort of the New World Order folks came out of the closet. And, we had Dick Morris on Fox News saying, yes, Virginia, there is a conspiracy. The leadership seemed to be happy and to succeed in stifling the squabbling between them temporarily. But I don't think it said anything other than everybody in the pro-centralization team was committed to taking from the pro-decentralization team to cover themselves.
Now, I'm looking at a headline that doesn't appear to relate to what we're talking about, but I have a feeling you're going to be able to make the connection. And this is just coming off the wires of the BBC, Catherine. And it says that U.S. crew members have recaptured their ship after it was hijacked by Somali pirates, but the captain is still being held for ransom. Now, I guess my question is, what do we, the working people of America, and the people who are getting screwed by everybody on Wall Street in Washington, and we're also going to talk about how that happens in the heartland, as they say, but haven't we all been hijacked?
Yeah. One of the things that I've been very focused on this week is we keep talking about the economy and economic problems as though it's something that's happening on Washington and Wall Street instead of every community in America. And part of the challenge we have in addressing what's going on and why it's so important to understand the fundamental economics on the ground on Main Street is if you look at the fraud in the economy, it's not just that we have fiat currency. It's not just that there's fraud in the mortgage markets and the derivatives markets. The fraud is in everything, Dennis. It's in every local economy throughout the country. And in fact, overwhelming as it may seem, if we face it, there's tremendous opportunity for both communities and households to start to shift things to their benefit. Now, let me give you an example. In the late 90s, I decided I couldn't make sense of the official statistics. It's one of the reasons I started to read Shadow Stats. And I decided to understand the economy, I was really going to start to, you know, dig in and find out what was going on. So I moved to Tennessee, and one of the things that struck me was there was a I would go through a nearby town, and there was one franchise restaurant that was always empty, day after day, night after night, week after week. And I thought, well, that's very odd. And I sort of calculated out their overhead. There was no way their revenues could cover their overheads, there being no business. So I took notice, and I started I was driving up to Washington once a month, so I passed 25 of those franchises on the way up, and 25, same 25 on the way back. And I started to go in and talk to the people working there, and I've run small businesses, so I estimated out sort of what their overhead was. And what was amazing, day, night, weekends, whatever time of day or night, they were always empty. There was no way their revenues could possibly cover their expenses. And so I said, well, this is very strange. So I decided I'd start estimating out the interstates. So, you know, at any interstate exit, you have a couple of restaurants, franchise restaurants, a couple of motels, some gas stations, same thing. I'd estimate out the overhead of staffing and keeping them operating and running the electricity versus the revenues. And for many of them, not all of them, but many of them, there was no economic justification for their existence. So I started to say, well, you know, what are they doing? Are they laundering? Are they engaging in money laundering? Are we just taking the money that's going missing from the federal government and running it through their balance sheets? Because then, you know, a lot of these were stock marketplace. You have stocks trading at a multiple of 20 times earnings at that time. So if you launder a dollar through this, that goes up $20. Or is it a real estate play? What is it? But what I started to realize, you know, is we not only had a fiat currency, we had a whole fiat economy. And I wouldn't have believed it was as bad as it was if I hadn't lived through sort of the period in the 90s when I saw top law firms and top accounting firms and just completely lie. Well, now that that's all come out, the opportunity for a lot of us is if we can start to map out, we call it in the permaculture world, we're calling it financial permaculture. If we can start to map out how the money works in our place, you know, a lot of us in our small businesses have been outcompeted by this sort of fiat income, fiat capital, big corporations with government contracts that kind of push us out of the market. If we can start to dig in and really understand what's going on, we can start to pull the rug out. And speaking of that, there was a wonderful article recently in USA Today, it's up on my blog, about communities that have started to print their own currency to keep economic activity going. And you have both community groups and small businesses just saying, you know, let's get off the dollar. Let's just print it. If they can make fiat currency, so can we.
Now, Catherine, just to talk a little bit about this in the context of the mortgage meltdown, it does seem that this notion of, you know, really cardboard houses with, you know, simply made of cardboard fronts and nothing behind, no worth, and it becoming a sort of on paper Wall Street operation, isn't that really what happened with the housing market? They took the real value of these houses in the context of the local community, and they turned them into make-believe paper value on Wall Street.
Well, I remember walking into a doctor's office here in Tennessee, and I think it was about 2001, 2002, and there was a sign in the doctor's office saying, if you buy a house, you can finance 100% and in addition take out money to pay your bills this month. So if you didn't have a way to pay your bills, you could simply agree to buy a house. And in the borrowing, you could take out more money than 100% of the cost of the house and all the fees of doing the mortgage, et cetera.
Well, that's simple enough. How come I didn't buy 200 houses?
I think part of the problem was clearly you had all sorts of games around appraisals and other things, but I think in many cases you had 10 mortgages on a house. I mean, the strategy that's being used by people all over the country, and you can find something on my blog about Produce the Note, demanding that getting the judge and the courts to demand that the person trying to foreclose produce the note. And many, many times it's being reported all over the country they can't produce the note. And I suspect that's because the note's in 10 other mortgage pools.
Because it's incomprehensible even to people who it happens to, even to judges who are find themselves in the twilight zone where they literally can't figure out who the landlord is, who to hold accountable, who owns the house. I mean, say just a little bit more about that, because it sounds like we're talking gobbledygook here.
I don't know if you saw Bill Moyer's interview with William Black, who was a bank regulator.
I missed that.
Okay, it's up again, it's up on my blog, and it's really worth seeing, because Black really walks Moyer's through the fact that this was intentional, that the housing bubble bankrupting people, this was all intentional. It was a plan. They knew what they were doing. It was no big accident. And he walks through to ground zero. Now, what he doesn't add, which I will add as Assistant Secretary of Housing, is the fact that I think that the same mortgage note was being taken and used to create multiple mortgages and multiple pools in fraudulent ways. So you have one house and 10 mortgages on that same house. And I'll tell you the first.
How do you take 10 mortgages on one house? How?
Well, you just create the paper. And since you're putting them in pools, and let me give you an example. Let's say I have a house that is financed with an FHA mortgage insurance policy from the Federal Housing Administration. Okay, so I take that mortgage and I put it in a pool of 100 mortgages, and I securitize it through Ginnie Mae, so the investor, which say will be the California Pension Fund, buys a Ginnie Mae, 100 million of Ginnie Mae securities, which is guaranteed by the full faith and credit of the United States. So pension funds and investors, sovereign wealth funds all over the world buy a Ginnie Mae mortgage pool. It wouldn't surprise me if a whole bunch of your listeners could look at their 401k and IRA and see something, you know, Ginnie Mae, a fund that just buys Ginnie Mae's. It's a full faith and credit. It's like buying a U.S. Treasury from a credit standpoint. Well, nobody says, well, are the mortgages real or not? They don't really care. The mortgages are guaranteed by FHA, right? Well, in theory, if I take, you know, if I build that 100 million mortgage pool with mortgages, you know, 10 mortgages on 10 houses each, or, you know, or something like that, who's to know? And the only way anybody would know is if I have trouble meeting my cash flow, because if there are no real homes, I mean, if there are 10 homes holding up 100 mortgages, where's the cash flow going to come from? When I was the FHA commissioner, we would have communities where homes defaulted 2, 3, 4 times a year, and the FHA fund paid for all of that. And my theory is many of those sort of churn defaults is what was holding up the pools, and this was one of the ways they were financing the black budget. And I have many, many stories about why I've come to believe this. It wasn't any particular thing. I often tell a story of one mortgage banker who came to see me after we finally got audited financial statements published for the FHA. And the guy came to see me. He came in, got an appointment with me, put a lot of pressure on a friend of mine to see me, and he said, there's been a terrible mistake. Now, remember, my company at this point is portfolio strategist for the whole FHA, $400 billion portfolio. He comes in and he says, my family's been in the mortgage banking business for 3 generations. There's been a terrible mistake. Our core competency is we track all FHA mortgages and related securities outstanding. And he pushed a huge pile of paper at me, you know, feet high, and said, I've brought you a copy of my database. He said, the amount of FHA mortgages outstanding is many multiples of what is in these financial statements, but there's been a terrible mistake. Well, Dennis, I thought the guy was crazy, because what he was saying was the U.S. Treasury and the Federal Reserve Bank and Chase Manhattan and the big servicers at Ginnie Mae and FHA were engaged in massive securities fraud. I thought the guy was crazy. And then it was only when, you know, we were attacked and our database is sealed and destroyed, we were building software that would allow the average American to just come in on the web and relate all the FHA and federal housing money in their community to real property in their community, which would have integrated all the knowledge in the two worlds. And if that kind of fraud existed, it would have brought it down. And, you know, so the question for me was, why in the world would all this time and money be spent to seize our business, steal our software, keep it under lock and key for many years, you know, and just attack us? And I finally, after much research and talking to many people who were engaged for the intelligence communities in black budget fraud, came to the conclusion it must be true that they were creating all these different fraudulent mortgages. And, of course, now that we see what's happening with the bailouts, that's the only, to me, the only logical explanation that can explain these kind of bailouts. And that's what Black says to Moyer. This was intentional.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We're speaking with Catherine Austin Fitz. We usually do that every Wednesday on a segment we call Community Business with Catherine Austin Fitz. She's the former Assistant Secretary of Housing. She was a Wall Street apartment, a Wall Street firm, and knows a great deal about what happens on Wall Street and has been studying for many years its relationship to what happens to your life on Main Street. And I guess let's just end by saying two things. One, some people are sort of calling the Defense Secretary Gates' new defense package sort of a alternative stimulus package. And what does all that have to do with Newt Gingrich talking about electric magnetic pulses on Fox?
Well, we've created a really elegant, the model that America has been operating on, and it's really the Anglo-American alliance for hundreds of years now, is called the central banking warfare model, where the central banks print money and the military ensures that everybody takes it and that the system has access to cheap natural resources and markets. And so there's a very intimate and important relationship between financial performance and military performance. You know, they're like two sides of the same coin. And, of course, I believe one of the reasons that the dollar has remained strong besides, you know, despite the fact that we have a fiat money and fiat economy and, you know, sort of all this fraud and corruption, is because of our development of invisible weaponry, including satellite systems and very powerful surveillance and intelligence technology. And Gingrich was on Fox News the other day and was asked about the Korean launch and missile launch, and he brought up electromagnetic pulse. If you watch the video, my interpretation is he was proposing that the United States should have taken out the missile with electromagnetic pulse. Wall Street published it and now has had to retract it, saying that Newt meant to say that the danger was that the Koreans could use electromagnetic pulse. But it's a little slip. It's important, Dennis, because it's this kind of weaponry which is playing a role in keeping the dollar strong worldwide. And so it's very important for us to understand
this. How does that work?
Well, it's very simple. Electromagnetic pulse weapons can literally render the electronic systems of a plane or an operation moot. So literally imagine one country saying to another country, if you don't hold our currency, if you don't buy our treasury bills, we're going to knock your planes out of the sky.
Well, that takes care of business, doesn't it?
Well, you can create a global taxation system. What we've done is we've created a global taxation system through the balance sheet. So you can pay me, let's say every year this is like the mafia don coming in and wanting racket, you know, enforcement money. It's, you know, you pay me to go away. And so every year I can get you to pay me, some income as a tax, or I can just give you I can get you to buy treasury bills that go down in value or hold dollars, and they, you know, I trade you for your manufactured goods. I give you dollars. They go down in value. Okay? That's taxation, but it's through the balance sheet. I don't have to get a legislature to approve it. I can just do it through the back door. And that's what's been happening for years.
All right. Well, Catherine Austin Fitz, as always, very informative to speak with you every Wednesday on Community Business. People can check you out at solari.com/blog if they want to communicate with you. Check out the kinds of things you're involved with. We thank you for being with us every week on
Have a great day, Dennis.
You too. Bye-bye.